We've been discussing what to read all of this hour as schools grapple with what might be the most relevant and useful reading list for young students. Our next guest says, though, that history and fiction are actually intertwined in most books, whether they are novels or social studies textbooks. The merging of mysterious little details of American history with her fictional imagination is the latest project of writer Emma Donoghue. Her collection of short stories, Astray, is about a period in American history when people came from all over the world to the United States to completely restart their lives and identities. The mid-1800s. A Texas slave who kills his master and runs away with the master's wife. An elephant trainer heartbroken at the sale of his best friend to P.T. Barnum. A brother who appeals to Charles Dickens to help raise money for his sister to give up prostitution and find a new start. These are some of the real news items that became the basis of Donoghue's stories. This story collection, Donoghue agreed, is something like history shouting out challenges for a storyteller, in the same way an audience shouts out situations for an improv comedy troupe. The more obscure, the greater, she says, the challenge.
That's a good way of putting it, because actually I did find a lot of the material and the techniques absolutely new to me, you know. Like one of the short stories about this gang of nutcase counterfeiters who tried to ransom Abraham Lincoln's body. You know, I've never done a crime story. I've never done one of those classic sort of, you know, infighting among thieves kind of stories. I had to learn all the lingo, how they spoke in the 1870s in their particular crime subculture. And I had to get into a lot of quite macho areas for this book, like gold mining and prospecting and all that cowboy talk.
One of the things that's amazing to me is that the challenges from the individual news stories that each one of these short stories, fictional stories, is derived from seems like a unique challenge in and of itself, in both evoking a time, creating a set of characters, and creating enough of a story that is faithful to the original news story. And I think the story that begins this, the relationship between a man and an elephant, a single voice, and the entire story of what happened to Jumbo in the 1800s is evoked.
Well, that one, in a way, was easy, because as soon as I'd figured out that I wanted Matthew Scott, Jumbo's lifelong keeper, to tell the story directly to Jumbo, that I wanted it to be like a sort of conversation between intimates, in a way that had solved the whole problem. So for me, it's all about point of view. And I would say some of the historical incidents that I researched and then didn't get around to writing a story about, it's because I couldn't find that particular way in. I try and only write a short story if fiction is what the case really needs. I mean, some cases are covered fine by regular historians' methods. So for here, I was looking for stories that will never be truly told any other way but fiction, you know, where there are just massive gaps that only fiction can fill.
And in so many of these stories, the theme that unites them is this idea that you come to the United States as a stranger, discover freedom, discover yourself. And sometimes the outcomes aren't terrific, but it's the same adventure all the same.
It's true. It's true. I mean, both negative and positive versions of that. You know, the country has a blank slate. Yeah. Or even journeys within the country. Like one of the stories that scared me most at a technical level was about a slave in Texas in 1864 who killed his master and ran away with mistress. And I knew I wanted to tell that story in the first person, to have the slave tell his own story, because I didn't want to make him a kind of a passive object by having him described from the outside. So I thought he has to tell the story, which means I have to get slave dialect of the 1860s right, or else I will be slapped down, you know. So I felt way outside my comfort zone with quite a few of these stories, but it was a hugely exciting exercise.
You know, this period of history that you choose, roughly from the late 1700s to the late 1800s, is an amazing moment in world history, in the sense that the development of the United States and the movement of the frontier and the fascinating idea that is America back then allows for this blank slate narrative to be recreated in person after person after person.
Yes, and one reason I start with a story of one of the Puritan settlers in Massachusetts in the 1630s is that they came with such mixed feelings. On the one hand, they wanted the blank slate, the virgin territory, but then they were so scared and cold and, you know, fearing that they wouldn't get through the winter. So you could tell often they longed for the coziness of a little English town, but because their religion had been proscribed there, they had to come and try and live out that fantasy of theirs in Massachusetts. Massachusetts, but, you know, they were really afraid of the wilderness. And so it wasn't always a confident movement of emigration, like, let's go settle ourselves some land. Quite often it was, you know, a terror of the unfamiliar.
There are many great scenes in this book, Astray by Emma Donoghue. But there is a love scene in here. The woman's name is Molly, and she's barely a woman. And she is such an extraordinary character. And this scene of intense, macho, and just pathetic, alcoholic horror becomes this touching little love scene. I was astounded.
I'm so glad you think so, because it really annoyed me that in one review, somebody described that as a rape scene. And I thought, I went out of my way to show that when she and this other, you know, tough, hard scrabble, hard drinking prospector, when they roll around by the campfire together, you know, it's utterly wanted. You know, I wanted it to be a genuinely sexy Western moment. And
well, it was also, you know, she wants a child. And so she's bargained with the wife to get one of her children. And when he finds out about this, he's the worst father in the world, but he says, no way, but you can have this. And they have a little roll around the campfire.
Yeah, I so much enjoyed that. And also, you at first, because she's a cross-dresser, you know, people probably at first think, oh, she's not going to be interested in men. But far from it, I think she just liked everything about masculinity, including the men.
This Molly Sanger character, I would not have known about her but for this collection.
I know, and I wouldn't write a whole novel about her because she ended up getting locked up for insanity for 25 years.
It's a very sad story.
So, I mean, if you look at her story as a whole, which you would have to if you were writing a novel, then it's brutal. But, you know, if you look at her at a particular moment when she was in her prime having her adventures, then it can be a marvelous moment.
You seem to really sympathize with this experience of casting yourself as a seed in a brand new place.
Well, I often say that I wrote this book because I've emigrated twice to England and then to Canada. And of course, my experience was nothing like that. It's been so easy. You know, I've been able to fly back to Ireland a couple of times a year, so I've never been really cut off. But in a way, that's given me a very sharp appreciation for how different travel was back then, you know, how high the stakes were. And, you know, when you settle somewhere that looks more or less like home and the people speak English just like home, it's all the more unnerving when you suddenly use a word that the people in the shop don't understand, you know, because you think you're sort of at home, and then there are moments of cultural misunderstanding when you suddenly think, I'm a long way from home. So I found
it. Trolleys even, and lorries and
yeah. So even the subtle differences between me and everybody else in the city I live in Canada, they make me aware of what a big deal it is when you do settle thousands of miles from where you started.
Although I do notice that you've purchased a few pair of cowboy boots in Nashville on this particular trip.
That's a moment of madness on a book tour. You're traveling so fast through each city that you just desperately want to grab something of the flavor of that city so that you can remember, you know, which one was Nashville and which one was Miami. So in this case, it was the boots.
Is it Emma madness or Molly madness that you thought of when you purchased those boots?
Probably writing the Molly story influenced me to buy the boots. It's true, because once you've conjured somebody up in your words, they do become a sort of permanent part of you. They're one of the voices in your head.
Well, would that I could be one of the voices in your head. Emma Donoghue, thanks so much.
Anytime.
Emma Donoghue is the author of the new book, Astray, a collection of short stories.